ever thought I'd get pissed off at the Girl Scouts? I get pissed off at a lot of people in a lot of groups, but the Girl Scouts? What did they do to warrant my rage and the rage of Megyn Kelly and others? Well, you're going to find out. It has to do with Justice Barrett. I'm going to still buy Girl Scout cookies, but it's going to leave a bitter taste in my mouth, and you'll hear why on The Dirt Show. I don't know why I'm so pissed off at the Girl Scouts for having rescinded their tweet congratulating Justice Amy Coney Barrett for being the fifth woman to be appointed to the United States Supreme Court. I have to tell you, it really, really, really gets me angry. I think because it's a reflection of the times and the fact that we can't even congratulate a woman for having been appointed to the Supreme Court. Do we forget that it was only in the last years that we had our first woman on the United States Supreme Court? We went through how many years of American history with an all-male, all-white Supreme Court? It's just appalling to me that the pushback that the Girl Scouts got. What did they do, after all? They tweeted a picture of the five women who have been on the United States Supreme Court. Justice Ginsburg, Justice Kagan, the others, three of them are liberals, two of them are conservatives. Pictures of all of them, and then just wrote a little statement, congratulations, Amy Coney Barrett, for becoming the fifth woman appointed to the Supreme Court since its inception in 1789. Nothing political about that. They didn't say we're so thrilled that she was appointed because she's a conservative and because she was appointed by President Trump. They would have done the same thing no matter who the person was. Indeed, they did do similar things in the past to elevate the status of women, Hillary Clinton, and others. But when they did this, the pushback was unbelievable. People threatened to stop buying Girl Scout cookies. One guy said, I have to figure out how to make my own cookies. I'm no longer going to buy cookies anymore from the Girl Scouts. Why are they doing this? Representative Ayanna Presley, who represents the district I spent my life in Cambridge, Massachusetts, said, what kind of a patch does one earn for uplifting a woman who is the antithesis of justice? First of all, nobody's uplifting anybody. They're just congratulating her for being the fifth justice in the Supreme Court. And second, what do we know about her being the antithesis of justice? She hasn't even decided a single case as a justice. Give her a break. Give her an opportunity. Maybe she'll surprise you. Maybe she'll disappoint the hard right. We can't be absolutely 100% positive of what she will say about the rights of women. Yes, she's personally opposed to abortion, but, a very large percentage of Americans, particularly those who are of certain Catholic and Protestant faiths, believe that an abortion is murder. It's not a view I share, but it's a view I understand. And I would never condemn anybody for holding that view any more than I would for holding other views, religious or political, that I fundamentally disagree with. The question is, how do you respond to disagreement? And the idea that the Girl Scouts rescinded the tweet, took it down. I think Megyn Kelly, who was a guest on this show, and as you know, I agree with many of the things, but not all of the things. She's to my right and more conservative than I am. Here's what she said. This is pathetic. It's not partisan to generically congratulate the fifth woman ever to join the high court. It's patriotic. Taking your tweet down is partisan. However, and a real disappointment. She's 100% right. Look, I was a Boy Scout. I was a Cub Scout, Pack 453. My father was the den master. I love the Scouts. They taught patriotism. I learned how to make knots, and I got some of the patches. It was great to be a Boy Scout. a lot of our friends were Girl Scouts. And brownies, you know, all of that. It was part of growing up. The Girl Scouts have an absolute right. Sure, it's identity politics. Why are they congratulating only women? You know, we can have that argument. But they are the Girl Scouts. They are supposed to focus on the achievements of women. And what the critics don't understand is that what they're arguing for is the most anti-feminist view imaginable. What they're saying is women can be praised for their accomplishments only if they fit a certain mold. Conservative women don't count as women for purposes of achievement. We only count liberal women who support our views. Again, it so generalizes. If you want to elevate women, you have to make it clear that every woman has the right to choose her own politics. Every woman has the right to choose her own religion, her own ideology. The USA Today had an article in which they said that after it was taken down, conservative supporters of Barrett, here's what it says, the retreat by the Girl Scouts was quickly assailed by many of Barrett's conservative supporters. Well, I'm not one of Barrett's conservative supporters. I was opposed to that nomination going forward. I think the Democrats had a nomination, Merrick Garland, stolen from them by a made-up principle that said you don't confirm a nominee during the last year of a president's term. Senator Graham said, you know, quote my words. And I did. I quoted his words. I took them seriously. And so I was opposed to the nomination going forward. Once the nomination went forward, I think it's hard to oppose on the merits Justice Barrett. She was highly qualified, extraordinarily qualified, about as qualified as Merrick Garland. I don't know how I would have voted as a senator. I know I would have voted against bringing the nomination forward. I would have joined two Republican senators, Collins and Murkowski from Alaska, Collins from Maine, in opposing the nomination going forward. But I don't know whether I would have done what Senator Collins did, and that is oppose the nomination after that vote was lost, or would have joined Senator Murkowski and saying, look, we lost the procedural issue. They never should have had this nomination, but I can't take it out on Justice Barrett. She is highly qualified, even though I disagree with her positions on a range of issues. I don't know how I would have voted, but it would not be unthinkable to vote for the nomination in the same way that many conservative senators, Senator Graham himself, voted for the nomination of all the liberal justices, the women, Justice Ginsburg and others. And you fight your battles. The battle over this nomination was largely a battle over principle. Should the nomination be allowed to go forward just literally days before the election, or should the election have determined who gets to make the nomination? I'm clearly on one side of that issue. I think the nomination should not have gone forward. I'm in favor of a new rule of the Senate, which said that once a nomination, if a nomination is put forward, anytime after the conventions are over, the Senate should not act on it. It would change the rules. It would be a rule applied equally to both sides. The shoe would have to fit on both sides, on both feet. That's not the rule today. And so, yeah, I could be angry at the Republicans for playing fast and loose with principle. And I certainly myself, if I were a president, wouldn't have nominated Justice Barrett. She's not a nominee who fills my criteria ideologically, jurisprudentially. But I wasn't elected president. Trump was elected president. He gets to make that decision. The Senate gets to decide whether to confirm it. What the Senate's rules should be, what their criteria should be, are up for dispute. I began writing about this in the 1970s. I wrote it. Piece in the New York Times saying the Senate need not give the president a partisan victory. If the president picks somebody on partisan grounds, the Senate has the right to oppose it on partisan grounds. That's a debate that's going to go forward. We've changed the practice. Generally, presidents were given deference on who they nominated to the Supreme Court, even by senators who disagreed with the politics or ideology of the nominees. Now that seems to have changed, and the vote in this case was a very close one, strictly along partisan lines, except for the two and the one who held out. Senator Collins was the only senator to vote against the nomination from the Republican side. So we've politicized the Supreme Court, and we're going to see more of that going forward when, depending on who is president, depending on who controls the Senate, we're probably going to see repeats of this. If not in the next 4 years, in 8 years, in 12 years, we're going to see efforts to get court packing. Some of the same people, the same Congress people who demanded that the Girl Scouts take down the tweet are going to also demand court packing. We'll fight those battles, but I just want to get back to common decency and our ability to talk to each other and our ability to agree to disagree without being disagreeable. That lost when the Girl Scouts changed their view. They're never again going to congratulate anybody who has any kind of partisan contact at all. They're going to now stay away from that because they're the big losers. They lost among some people when they put the tweet up, and then they lost among, I think, many more people when they took the tweet down. So my view is nothing wrong with putting the tweet up. Nothing wrong with congratulating a woman, if you're the Girl Scouts, for being the fifth person to be nominated to the United States Supreme Court, even if you disagree with their politics. Nothing wrong with congratulating them. Something very wrong with listening to the crowd. And, you know, you don't even know how many people tweeted against them. There could have been hundreds of thousands of people who supported, Girl Scouts who supported the tweet. But when you get a few loudmouth tweeters, it can only be a few dozen, some of them prominent, Amber Tamblyn, the actress, others. Often the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and the Girl Scouts will listen to maybe a much smaller number of tweets. It wasn't a Democratic small d decision based on a poll or based on getting input from all of the over a million members. It was responding to a few tweets that were angry, but angry tweets are the name of the game today. We're going to see more of that. So, Girl Scouts, I'll still buy your cookies. I love the mint chocolate cookies. I've always bought Girl Scout cookies, but it's going to leave a bitter taste in my mouth when I eat that mint chocolate chip cookie this time. I don't like what you did. I like what you did when you made the congratulations. I don't like what you did when you submitted to pressures to take down the tweet because you thought that would be the nonpartisan thing to do. You were wrong. That was partisan. What you originally did was nonpartisan, but then when you capitulated to pressure, that was partisan. I'm sure many of my viewers belonged to the Girl Scouts when they were kids. Some may be adult members or advisors to the Girl Scouts. I'd be very interested whether you agree with me and Megyn Kelly on the one hand, or with Amber Tamblyn and some of the others, and the Congresswoman from Cambridge. On the other hand, let me hear your views on the Dershow. When is it proper to congratulate a woman for having broken a glass ceiling? When is it proper to simply congratulate somebody for accomplishing something, even if you wish she hadn't been nominated? Call me. Leave a message on the Dershow. I will respond to your questions. So let's now turn to some questions from listeners and viewers on the Dershow. Our first call is from Frizzard in Los Angeles.
Question about current event. You are following news, I am sure. You know that the America is making Israel an Arab country in Middle East. Make peace, make deal, all sort of a thing. I am wondering what you think is going to be reaction of Iran. Is my country original? I'm sure you can tell from accent. I want to know what you think is going to be the response of Iran Republic to this peace deal between Israel and the country of Middle East. Thank you for taking my question. I hope you have a wonderful day. And Jahbur.
Great question. You know, the Persian people, the people who live in Iran, have always been friendly to Jews, have always been friendly to Israel under the Shah. There were close relationships between Israel and the country of Iran. But when the Ayatollahs came in, they decided for their own domestic purposes to call Israel the little devil and America the big devil. And they've become antagonistic to Israel and antagonistic to peace. And they're going to be very unhappy with this deal, because part of the reason why the Gulf states have turned to Israel for support is because of Iran, because Iran is obviously in the process of trying to develop a nuclear arsenal. And they know that Israel will never allow that to happen. And Israel might very well work together on intelligence and militarily and economically and strategically and technologically to thwart the Iranian ambition to create a nuclear arsenal. So I think the unhappiest people in the Middle East about this peace process, in addition to a few just anti-Israel and anti-Semitic people who just don't want to see Israel live in peace, the people who are going to be most angry are the Iranian Hezbollah in Lebanon, the Iranian regime in Iran itself, but I suspect not the Iranian people. I think they want a normalization with Israel as well. Justin, in Las Vegas, what's your point?
I'm really enjoying your podcast. The question I have is about originalism. I've heard Ted Cruz's description of it and how he values it, and it seems understandable. The question is, for people who have the opinion that originalism is not the purpose of the Supreme Court, what then should be the focus of the rulings of the Supreme Court judges, and how would one evaluate a nominee from their prior history to be suitable or unsuitable to sit on the Supreme Court? So anyway, keep up the great podcast. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you so much. Look, we're all originalists in an important sense of that word. We all look to the text of the Constitution when it says you have to be 35 to be president. There's no disputing that. You can't be 34 and be president. You have to be 35. But as an originalist, I have to ask myself, how did the framers intend words like equal protection of the law, due process of law, cruel and unusual punishment? How did they intend those phrases to be interpreted? Obviously, there's no original understanding or meaning of those terms. They were deliberately put in because they were open-ended and capable of interpretation and construction. And as John Marshall, the first great Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, not the first Chief Justice, but the first great one, said, this is a constitution we're expounding. A document that's intended to last through the ages. And for a document to last through the ages, it has to be relevant. So we have a constitution that is in part a dead constitution that has provisions that are not subject to interpretation other than under the original understanding. And then we have some other provisions that the original understanding was that it would be subject to interpretation over time, that equal protection is a promise, an aspiration that will change. Cruel and unusual punishment. At the time of the framers, we were nailing nails into people's ears and, you know, torturing them because we didn't have prisons. Now we have prisons, and a concept of what is cruel and unusual changes. Unusual by itself suggests a temporal analysis. Unusual today or unusual back in 1793, obviously, the answer has to be, what is so unusual today? Take the death penalty. We're the only Western democracy that still has the death penalty. And I think one can make the argument. It's an argument I've made. I've seen the opposite argument made, that even though the death penalty is mentioned in the Constitution, it has become anachronistic. It has become unusual. It's always been cruel, but it's now become unusual as well. So I think we have to have a more subtle understanding of what originalism means. It doesn't only mean that we never adapt the open-ended phrases of the Constitution to the new realities. A repeat caller, Harvey from Henderson.
Why don't you try and get Tony Bobulinski as your next guest? A cross-examination from you would certainly reveal truth and fiction. And if this isn't really your area of expertise, I've got several questions I'd sure like to ask. Thank you and have a great day. Bye.
Thanks a lot. That's a great idea. I would be happy to have him on the show, and I would cross-examine him very rigorously. And because I thought when I saw him on Tucker Carlson, I thought a lot of his answers were compelling. I thought some of his answers were less compelling, and I would like very much to subject his analysis to cross-examination. So maybe I'll reach out, see if I can find him, and if I can, maybe he'll be a guest on the show. In fact, if you're listening, Tony, please call the show, and you have an invitation for me to come on and express your view. We're not afraid of any views on this show, so call us. Our next caller is from Ohio. Fred?
Thank you for what you do. Was listening to episode 37, which was published on the 27th of October. A caller named, identifying himself as Devin, called in. And about the 17-minute, 54-second mark, the caller says, God has Trump on his side. Your response at about the 19-minute, 59 mark was exactly the opposite, where you interpreted God is on Trump's side. That's not what the caller said. Thanks again for all that you do. I hope this clears things up. Be safe. Bye.
Well, thanks for your correction. The point I was really making was to quote Abraham Lincoln, who said, the issue is not whether God's on our side, but whether we're on God's side. And so I don't really like invoking God, either for a basketball or football team or for a political party. I think God's nonpartisan. Hey, Wally from California, what's your point?
Alan, what are your comments on the story about the Malaysian Premier Mahathir Mohamad tweeting that Muslims have a right to kill the French, millions of French, and Twitter declines to delete this post until the French government says, if not, you're an accessory or accomplice to a formal call for murder. And then finally they do, Twitter does delete it, saying that it violates their policy on glorifying violence. What are your comments? I mean, first of all, glorifying violence is a great understatement for, at a call for murder. And it seems like it's like a declaration of war. Wouldn't that be bad not only for the French, but also for Malaysians and Muslim people who might be seen as murderers now? Anyway, what are your comments on that? And also on the behavior of Twitter, particularly in regards as they censor tweets about wearing masks and stuff like that, but not calls for murder. Thanks. Thanks for a great show.
A great question. Really, 2 points. One, obviously, nobody can justify anybody, whether you're a prime minister or an imam or a priest or a rabbi or an ordinary lay person calling for a murder. We know that there were rabbis who were calling for the murder of Rabin 25 years ago. There have been some clerics who have called for the murder of abortion doctors. There have been obviously some imams who have called for the killing of heretics and others, and now we have political figures doing that. There's no justification for it. Twitter has to have standards, and if the standards include excluding any call for violence, then they did the right thing. But I have to apply that standard across the board. They can't selectively decide which tweets they want, which they don't, and they shouldn't be responding to the French government. They should be proactively deciding what gets shown on their platform. So it's complicated, and we're going to be discussing a lot of these issues in the shows to come, because Twitter and Facebook and Google and all the platforms are really experiencing very great changes in the roles they're playing, and legislation is being considered. My former student Ted Cruz has been leading the campaign. We've invited him to be on the show as well. I hope he'll accept the invitation. So we'll be hearing more about these very complicated issues on The Der Show. So please come back, listen and view, and call in. We really appreciate your views. Thank you. Please call 24/7. The number is 216-710-0050. Keep your comments short and to the point. Again, the number for you to call 24/7 is 216-710-0050. Hard questions, criticisms, everything's fine. Just keep your questions short, and I'll answer them all on The Der Show.